Intrepid is a tabletop game that draws a fantasy world from your imagination, which you explore through characters and quests of challenge and glory.
I'm Epistory Richard, former coordinator of London Indie RPG and founder of The Pipeline.
I'm Robert Connell. Join me for a journey into adventure!
Okay, so Richard, why are we talking about the GURPS and story games?
We mentioned Intrepid several times last season.
It's also, I think, it's very appropriate for us to be talking about it in the same season as Archipelago, as it very much feels as though this is a game which is operating in that same space, and maybe it's trying to create a new Archipelago or an Archipelago which is using more of the gaming and design technology that's emerged over the previous few years. And finally, it's come out of the London indie scene. It's always good, it's always nice to reflect upon the games that are being created close to home. I think a lot of the designer's intent behind this was trying to find a way for us to tell stories that are primarily about a single character. The quintessential role-playing game story is about a party of characters or a group of characters moving through a situation or a storyline or a geographical area. But the classic works of literature focus typically upon one or two characters. Things that role-playing games like, which are fundamentally around a party, just don't do very well. The promotional blurb talks about epic stories of characters braving quests, but really I think the intent is to be able to support stories about single characters going on quests. And more broadly than that, a way, similar to Archipelago, to create a general storytelling support structure. This particular game does not have a lot of gaming mechanics within it. What it has is a lot of structure in order to help people kind of find their way through the story and support each other. So the primary way it does that is the quest. They start off all with three empty boxes, or three circles, written upon them. Those circles get marked off each time a character who is on that quest reaches a crossroads. And the crossroads is a dramatic moment where the players think that the story of that character may go one of two directions. The two main players in any particular scene, so the spotlight player and the director of that scene, both put forward their version of the resolution of that scene. The players all have a red card and a black card, and they put down a red card if they favour the player's resolution, and they put down a black card if they favour the director's resolution. What then happens is that one of those cards is drawn at random. Then if it's red, you go with the player explanation, and if it's black, you go with the director explanation. And so that means it is a more subtle approach, so that if there is a true consensus around the table of either player or the director, that means it will definitely go that way. If it's split 50-50, then you have a 50-50 chance of picking one or the other. If there is a majority view on what should happen going forward, then it is more likely that will take place. But there is always a possibility. The minority voice always has a chance of being heard. So by creating these characters, by placing them on these quests through a scene, and then by reaching these decision points through a number of scenes, then that's how we get that story structure of individual characters or pairs of characters completing these quests and then moving on to other things.
So it's possible for a scene to be framed and not result in a crossroads.
It is, yeah. And what that means is that you don't have a set number of scenes for any particular quest. What you have is you have a set number of dramatic moments.
So that's talking about quests. The characters go on the quest. So what is the construct or the shape of the characters?
So very simple, very straightforward, is that you start off with what's called a baseline, which you might also call a seed or a setting. You say this is broadly where we want our stories to be set. Then everybody simply just creates a character, so someone who they believe would be the kind of person who would go on quests within that setting. They write down the name, they write down one or two facts about them or a brief sentence about them, and then they draw them on the relationship map and add both a faction to which they have some kind of connection and a location as well.
We have an idea of someone who wants to change the world, I would say.
Or someone who has the potential to go on that kind of journey.
Yeah, okay. And then from the concept of that character, you create a place in the world that is relevant to them. An organization.
A faction, so a force of some kind.
A group that they may feel affinity to or opposed to. And the relationships, do the characters have relationships between themselves as well?
What happens is that you have a stage during the setup where you draw additional connections. So every player has contributed, first of all, a theme that they would like to be explored. They create their character, they create the location and the faction, and then everybody adds an additional connection between something they did create and something they did not create. Mm. Being forced to kind of make these connections and work out what kind of relationship do they have and how do these things connect. These are the kind of creative constraints that then kind of spark inspiration, make it feel like a world as opposed to just a series of disparate elements.
And so you mentioned that players can pitch themes in at the start of the game, and it seems to me that that's quite a strong definition of what the game that we're going to play together is.
It should be, yeah. They are kind of like a microscope palette. They're kind of like the yeses, the yes palette in microscope. It's what people think, the kind of things that people would like to explore as part of that setting. But actually, there is inspiration, but there's no requirement that a particular theme gets tied into any particular...
Right.
And in my experience is that the quests that you create, the stories that you create, tend to then have a life of their own. And looking back, you can then go, okay, well, we kind of addressed that theme as part of this story in this way. We kind of see how that influence came in. The themes often have a more subtle influence upon the shapes of the stories that come out, as opposed to, say, this particular quest must be about this particular theme. This is the one way that we are going to explore this theme.
The quest is presumably defined by its outcome or its journey?
The quest is created, again, as part of the setup. So you create your theme, you create your character, your location, your faction, and then you create the quests. But the quests themselves are deliberately vague so that they can transform themselves, or the shape of them doesn't need to be defined until you've had several crossroads on them. So in terms of where this game is coming from, I think it's really interesting that this is a game where the designer has looked at a whole bunch of design development and then has looked to take the best bits of each and add them to this engine. So you've got the setup, which is where the shapes of the boxes and the different connections is very reminiscent of Smallville. The concept of the character pools and holding a character returning it back to the pool is like a lighter version or a less stringent version of Remember Tomorrow. The mapping on Mighty Fuse or The Quiet Year or Chronicles of Skin. So the concept of marking off progress as your quest nears completion strikes me as very reminiscent of Kingdom, though I think Intrepid might have predated this, or they would certainly develop separately.
So I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of, again, it comes back to board game mechanics where you're trying to, I mean, you could go back to Puerto Rico where you're filling ships, right?
Yeah. So the phrases obviously were taken from Archipelago, as is acknowledged within the rulebook, and the general vibe of the game is very Archipelago. The crossroads, anybody instigating the crossroads reminds me of kind of GXB. And the concept of two different players putting forward alternate options and there being some kind of decision made between them is very reminiscent of Penny for My Thoughts. The red-black card mechanic is a little bit about what Primetime Adventures had in their second edition, but is more directly correlated to Misrobe Gate, which is another one of the inspirations the designer puts within the book. And thank you very much for that list, by the way. So there is a huge amount of just gaming knowledge, of design knowledge, that has been baked into this game.
All this stuff sounds very self-reinforcing. You know, you started out with some themes, you created some characters who seem likely, the world has sprung from the characters, which is kind of what we mentioned about what I like in Swords Without Master. We've then replaced the GM, essentially, with some concepts of a journey we could go on. Then, as play goes round the table, are people taking a character and guiding them through a quest until it's done?
So Intrepid has a concept of a character pool. The default state of the game is that all the characters that you create are in the pool, in the centre of the table or around the side of the table. And then when it comes to your turn, you can pick up any character you like, including the one you created. And if they are not on a quest, you put them on a quest. The one proviso is that you cannot put a character you created on the quest that you created. Again, it's requiring this cross-pollination between the players so that it's not possible for one person just to sit in their own corner and just explore their own little part of the universe. There has to be that collaboration through the game. Once they're on a quest, then they can be joined by other characters as well, in which case you add another circle. You require another crossroad to be embarked upon, because the more significant characters are placed upon this quest, obviously the more plot time it should take up, the greater spotlight it should be given.
And so when the quest ends and the crossroads are being filled out, who decide the consequences and how the game moves forward from that quest?
So once one quest is completed, then the player who completed that quest then creates a new one. The only other thing I would mention is that the default state is that you pick up a character each time you do the scene and then you return them back to the pool. If you want to, you can also hold the character. So if you say, listen, I really want to control this character for its next couple of scenes or couple of crossroads, then you can hold them by putting them in front of you, which means that nobody else gets to play with them in that time, but equally you can't play any other character till you hand them back.
I'm slightly surprised that the end of the quest doesn't result in a change somehow in the world, like a change in the relationship map or the physical map.
Those changes can happen at any time.
Right.
The relationship map is created in quite a structured way at the beginning, but once that's happened, then it is relatively free. As the story demands it, you add new characters, you add new factions, you change relationships as you want.
Known John Keyworth, I expect this has been play-tested to within an inch of
its life. Play-tested extensively, yeah.
And honed to a fine point, and everything is there to do a job. Is that true?
There are certain things that have been included, and I'm thinking particularly about the couple of ritual phrases that are brought in there from Archipelago that feel a little bit bolted on, that are there as kind of advisory play aids as opposed to driving towards the particular goal of this game.
That's kind of interesting. Do you want to carry on with your thoughts and we'll come back to that?
There are particular aspects of that that I think are not, that don't work well with the way, certainly with how I approach games. So one of the aspects of it is the director role. And the director is essentially kind of a stand-in GM for that scene. Is that they control everything else within the setting, is that other players can get involved in characters if that character is added to the scene by then holding them. But fundamentally, the director is there in order to provide dramatic escalation and also to ask questions or to encourage hard choices. But it has that problem that I had with Endurance, where Endurance, the spotlight player frames a question about other players, about other player characters. It may be something they're really interested in, but the other players who are then suddenly thrown into the scene are having to do it off the top of their heads. And similarly here, the director isn't pre-chosen. The rest of the players don't know what the spotlight player is going to frame. And so it's very much a matter of the spotlight player frames riding upon this dinosaur and I'm charging into the fortress of Abathnon. And then everybody else around the table looks at each other and goes, okay, well, somebody has to be the director for the scene. We don't really know where it's going, but we suddenly have to then play the world, and you're suddenly thrust into this position of having to generate a lot of content without having good communication with the person who's actually providing the inspiration for it all.
Right. So you're saying it's very dependent on someone sitting around the table going like, oh, that sounds amazing, I know exactly, I know what happens next.
Yeah, I can picture the scene and I can see how this player is looking to take this particular rope, and I can see what aspect of that character I want to explore, what question about that character that I want to resolve.
Just to clarify what you're saying here is that experienced players, experienced improvisers who know how to run with an obvious aspect or something that interests them will find this far easier than someone who is used to slightly more structured play. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
So I think the borrowing from Archipelago then is kind of important for two reasons. Number one, if you're neither the director nor the scene framer, and you're not playing a character who is relevant, they are subtle ways of guiding, of saying that you're engaged and giving feedback on the scene that is taking part. And the other aspect that they are playing is a way for people to indicate what is interesting in the scene. So even if one of you is flagging, there is some input to say, I like this, I want to see more of it, or actually, can this go a different way? That you absolutely need the archipelago phrases to be able to have a subtle input into it without directing it yourself.
Right.
So, you know, so for some games, you might have a tag team system where it's like, oh, actually, I know where this is going. Like, tag me in. I'm going to take over. Which can be great and also can be lurching from one story idea to another.
Yeah.
But the other thing is also because we don't know where the scene's going to end, it doesn't necessarily have a defined theme. You know, like we're not starting it with a lot of background beyond the immediate circumstances. The archipelago phrases are quite a good way to subtly kind of like guide towards a conclusion. You know, simply by saying, that's good, do more.
I think it's very difficult for the person in the director role to suddenly pick the scene up without a proper understanding of what the intention of the scene is.
Don't feel the quest, the notion of the quest, which is the overarching...
But the quests themselves, remember, are deliberately vague.
Right.
So there might be to discover the dark heart of this particular family, but nobody knows going into it what that is. And this person may be breaking down the walls of the fortress of this family, but the spotlight player and the director, neither of whom may know what they're going to find inside. And this kind of brings me on to my second point around it, and that is that when the quests are created, nobody knows what's going to happen with them. And part of that is fascinating, because we will learn as we go. But what you end up with when you have created these quests and created the factions, these relationships, is really a relationship map full of mystery. And mystery is problematic in GMless games, and I've spoken about this before, because mysteries tend to get layered upon. The more things are attributed to a particular mystery, so a mysterious force or a mysterious person or whatever, it then becomes more and more challenging to explain the mystery. But until you do explain the mystery, it is very hard to engage actively with that thing. It's the director's job. But the director has maybe had no creative input into this quest line until the particular moment where they are the director of the final scene. And so it's a big requirement to say that they now need to step up and provide a satisfactory resolution to it all.
You must be some kind of mystery magnet. You know, you've mentioned how these mysteries layer on one another. And when I've encountered the quests, you know, because it doesn't quite structure it this way, but there's three circles or there's three stages. And to me, that's an obvious beginning, middle and end. So when I've come to think about where things go, I felt like the structure on the card, like how many things have ticked, drives you to what you're looking at.
But they're an indicator of how far along your plot progression you are. But think about A Taste for Murder, where you have your three different layers of motives. And it's very prescriptive there to say that this is my obvious relationship, and then I had three levels and said that but secretly, this is the true. And then, but even worse, that this is true, and then the full horror is this. There's a very clear thing of progression there, and how you are supposed to be progressing this. Whereas Intrepid, is as the quest complete, is that you are just marking off the crossroads. And that significant moment, that dramatic moment, may have absolutely nothing relevant to the subsequent dramatic moment, or the one after, apart from the fact that they are supposed to be occurring on this particular quest line. Those kind of incremental stages have to point in the direction. It has to narrow our option. And they can do, because the players are guiding it that way, but there's nothing within the game, apart from the concept of, well, you're getting close to the end now, that actually helps people go, right, well, this mysterious thing that this person embarked upon, right, this is how, these are the options that are being cut off, or this is the guidance. These are the constraints that we're putting on the resolution that will help inspire us. Another thing that I feel very ambivalent about, it was a comment that I made, because the last time I played with somebody who was role-playing pretty much for the first time. And one of the comments that was made at the end by one of the other players was that the game is very flexible in terms of your role. And you might say this is a good thing. It has the opportunity, if you are a confident, expressive player, to play with a whole bunch of different characters, to direct a whole bunch of different scenes, to basically have a lot of input onto the relationship map, onto the geographical map, and have a lot of influence in the story. It also allows you, if you are not that kind of player, or you're not in the mood to play in that way, to take a character and to hold that character. You would never have to direct, because you never have to volunteer to direct. And that means that you can play in a very traditional manner, where you control your character and what your character does, and that is pretty much it. And you go, well, this is a wonderfully flexible tool. Isn't it great that people with such different play styles can play together? But what happens, or how I feel about what happens about the structure of the game, if one person is playing like that, that is essentially one player you are down for everybody else who is looking to collaborate. And equally, so if you have three people who are doing that and just really want to play their own characters, at that point, you've got one player who is then looking to collaborate with nothing, collaborate with themselves, and presumably is directing most of the scenes. And if you want to...
almost reinvented the traditional role-playing game structure.
Is it, you know, you absolutely have. But if that's your intention, to have that kind of dynamic, it's not something that you want to accidentally stumble into at the table.
There's two things here. It comes back to intent. I think, first of all, I'm going to join you slightly in saying a concern I have about Intrepid is that it is open and general and can accept a lot of different game styles. And while I like it as a game, what I've found myself is when I'm faced with a high-flavour, highly opinionated game that is maybe flawed, and a more open general play style that is well-structured and well-playtested, I would probably gravitate towards the stronger opinion because it's harder to get excited about the more, you know, openness and generic can also be bland. You end up going like, well, who am I going to be playing this open game with? Because it's really what they bring to the table that's going to matter.
This is a game which, it's a game that really gets out of the way of the players. And if you're with a group of players who really don't need much help from a game, and just need like a little bit of structure, that can be great. Because you are able to bounce off each other, and you can direct for each other, and you can put down quests for each other, and all that kind of thing. If that's the group you're with, even with those groups, is that sometimes you want to have that wild card in there. You want to have that injection of the unpredictable. You want to have that tilt where something happens that nobody expected to happen. So then it just becomes that moment in your mind where suddenly what you thought you were doing was actually something else entirely, and it reframes the story in your mind. Or it creates a connection that you never expected, which puts a whole new twist on it. Instead, what happens with the resolution mechanic is you have the spotlight player put forward their proposal, you have the director put forward their proposal, but what happens in practice is that the spotlight player will put forward their idea as to how it resolves. And the director player often will not have anything particularly different. Is it because feel that it's dramatic progress? They might have like a small twist on it.
When I played it, I was about to say this platform and tilt idea, I'd say it almost goes too far the other way. That like whatever the first player says, the second player is tempted to say the complete opposite. But when it works best is when, having heard a version of reality, the second player goes, well, or another interpretation of the same events is this kind of thing.
That, as I say, can be cool when you're playing with people who give you, like, surprises, who have that kind of, like, sparking imagination.
I want to come to another slight issue I have with Intrepid, which is this is a game of all the parts. You know, it has a map, and it has a relationship map, and it has quests, and it has characters, and it has themes, and it's very easy to get into a game which isn't really, you know, leveraging all these different components of it. The intent is to create a game about characters who go on epic quests. Epic quests. And I think what we're saying is that that is not guaranteed to happen.
No, not at all.
Fundamentally, this is all well-constructed, lots of good, solid ideas intersecting. But it sounds like it would be better if it was stripped down to just quests, like almost starting with quests and saying, what is the quest we want to experience? And put the palette almost on the quest.
I mean, what is the narrative? What is the narrative structure of a quest from the players? How do we encourage that kind of play within the game? So when we were talking about Swords of the Master, we talked about how the designer there had taken the narrative beats, the narrative structure of these sword and sorcery tales, and had built them into this game in these very specific phases. And that's something that hasn't happened here, is that you don't have the narrative structure of the quest being baked into this game. Mm. You have a structure that supports the progression of it, and you have a table full of inspiration.
So one of the interesting things that comes out of Swords Without Master and is reflected in one of the mini-games that is designed to teach Swords Without Master, Sorceress Bloody Sorceress, is a question, show me how, or tell me the story of how. It's that permissioning, right? So instead of starting the story, I charge into the heart of the Citadel. To say, show me how you gain access to the Citadel. Well, you might be storming it, you might be sneaking in.
You might have magicked yourself in.
Yeah, and tell me the story of what you discover inside the Citadel. You know, it's still a cold start, you may need to think about it. But the person asking the question tells you almost kind of what they want to see.
Tell me what you find within the Citadel and why it chills your blood. Or why it gives you a power that you undreamt of before.
Which is where you move from a question that's open to leading. That's a 1-2 combo. I think what's interesting is that what the game does do well is take the traditional aspects of a fantasy role-playing game. You create a map together. You create forces that are at work in society together. Create some characters and link them into that world. It is a rules-light way of having the whole campaign experience of something like D&D, but much, much quicker, right? Because it's kind of, you know...
So jump to the interesting bits.
Exactly.
Every scene you frame, it should be something that will probably lead to a dramatic moment.
Yes, and so if you take the normal D&D scenario, you have the setup, you have some part where you're overcoming some difficulties, and you're looting the treasure at the end, you know, like start, middle, end. And so those elements of it do, for me, deliver. So we're saying this is well-crafted, but ultimately a fundamentally flawed set of mechanics.
It's mechanics that are there and are very supportive to a motivated bunch of players. And I have heard several examples of people coming out of games of Intrepid and absolutely loving it. Mm. Loving the thing that they have created, they have collaborated on, and they have created together. But the game itself...
So it is adequately shared, the collective creativity, where all the players were bringing a lot to the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I feel that almost answers why should we play this game.
It is something which is very flexible. So you can pick any setting that you want, and it will support this, so long as that setting involves people who might go on a quest to do something. And so, I mean, I played it, obviously, in the generic fantasy. I played it with superheroes. I played it with space opera. You could play it in the Wild West. It always, I mean, you've talked about a post-apocalyptic thing. It fundamentally supports it. It's something which does not force you to do anything. It's not a game that is going to make you uncomfortable. If someone around a table wants to just hold their character and not be in a position to go outside of their character, then this game allows it. It does encompass different play styles. People who love Archipelago and they love Primetime Adventures and they love being able to like bounce these things backwards and forwards between themselves. This is a game that will support them just enough in order to effectively collaborate with each other.
It sounds to me like you're saying that it regulates, where you have a lot of creativity and a lot of excitement, it regulates it effectively to make sure that everyone is contributing in roughly equal measure.
Not in equal measure, but people are contributing to the extent that they wish to contribute. And it provides documentation. So somebody is stuck for ideas, they have the relationship map and the themes on the table in front of them. They have the geographical map, they have the blank spaces on the map where it's like, well, I wonder what happens if I go over there. So there is that inspiration on the table. So that would be the reason to play this game. If you want Archipelago, but you want more support and you want something that supports your individual playstyle, then Intrepid absolutely is that. If you want something which is a bit like Primetime Adventures in terms of where you can create anything, but you want, instead of doing a TV show, you want to have a more literary plot arc of single characters kind of going on a journey, then this absolutely supports it as well. But it will support you, but it will not lead you or drive you.
So I'm inviting you over
for a game of Intrepid? And are you
okay, what,
hell
what
yes,
time? What,
or
what day?
Are you thinking
you're inviting me over?
That's not relevant.
No, but it is. It is relevant. Right.
Oh, I see. Because
if you're inviting
policy,
me over,
it's the player that matters. Not
it's
the game.
Player that matters.
Okay. So
if you're inviting me over.
So
absolutely.
Someone's just met you.
If somebody's
like,
putting out,
hey,
cold
I
on
love
a,
story.
Putting it out cold on a convention, then
no. So it's the game to play between discerning, consenting adults.
It's the open, supportive game where you've got a regular group and you want to do something different and you want to create new, quick stories about heroic characters going on quests.
So in a way, this is occupying the same kind of zero prep space as Fiasco. You know, like your regular group is missing someone, you can't do a key session.
Yeah, the same social space, certainly.
Right.
You can see it as being a different way to explore an existing world, or just a bit of fun, or you can add it potentially to your ongoing storylines.
Mm.
So there's nothing to say that if you're running a current day version of a campaign set in the Star Wars universe, there's nothing to stop you going, hey, I'm going to go 1,000 years in the past in the days of the Old Republic, and we're going to have a whole bunch of quests there, and then there's going to be these little kind of snippets of information. That have then, like, these are going to become the legends that then exist within our world. There's nothing to stop you doing that. And be a nice kind of supplemental way to add to your ongoing campaign. This kind of game, had it come out in 2005, would have been, I think, amazing. Would have blown everybody away, and everybody would have gone, this is the game that we now play constantly, because we can play so many different kinds of stories. So we can play so many different settings, and we can get to the exciting parts, and we can talk freely across the table, and we're not, you know, slaves to an onerous system here. What I'm looking forward to is the Intrepid Histories. I don't know if that's going to be the final title, it's the current title. But where the designer has really just taken like a few bits of Intrepid and is putting them in specific historical contexts or fantasy historical contexts in order to do a revised version of Napoleon's invasion of Russia, or of the discovery of the Americas, or the circumnavigation of the world. You're adopting a small number of these rules, but you're bringing in, but you're giving that kind of real kick of inspiration.
And it sounds like you're inherently introducing the structure that you said the quests in Intrepid lacked, right? So you set off on a journey around the world, you are going to visit certain places, you're going to go...
The game, or at least the draft version of the games that I've played so far, have that concept of supporting the arc of the story a lot more effectively than we have in baseline Intrepid.
The thing that's always kind of struck me playing Intrepid is the writing of the quests. And I know you say they're kind of vague, but I kind of quite like the idea of looking at what the setup implies and then writing a quest idea that inspires someone else. Because you can't play your own quests. Or you can't have both sides of the equation. So I would tend to say that the quests are the things that you share with other people. It's not the only game that does this, but I quite like the idea of around the table saying, pitch me an idea for a story. What do you think would be an interesting story for this character? You give me something. Oh, and I get to choose. It's a nice little mechanic that I think you can lift out and use elsewhere. Going into a discussion of where this game sits in the grand pantheon, the celestial pantheon of games, I feel like we're going in quite down. We're quite down on this game.
I think we're acknowledging that it's good at some things, but it's maybe not good for the thing that we think it should be good at.
It's a step from freeform to structured freeform, but the other freeform games that we've discussed provide a better scaffold around how to generate good play.
So after talking about Intrepid, I want to go further back into a similar game which is focused around the tales of individual characters, and that is In a Wicked Age by Vincent Baker.
I also want to reach back in time to a classic game, which I don't think directly influences Intrepid, but shares many of the same concepts of storylines for characters within the game, and also pools of characters that can be shared and reused and appear as NPCs. So I want to talk about Remember Tomorrow, which is, in my mind, a forgotten sci-fi classic.